Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH, streaming on the KTTH smartphone app. A council member in Seattle just sentenced more addicts to despair and ultimately death. That's what's trending.
What's trending? The drug crisis.
That's the unfortunate reality of what it is we're talking about here. And we shouldn't understate it. We shouldn't sugarcoat it. That's the unfortunate reality, in that a council member, Andrew Lewis, decided to vote with the activists on the council to sentence more people to death. We can pretend that this isn't the end of the world. We can pretend that this was all done in good faith, that he just had a difference of opinion on drug possession laws and who should handle them in the city of Seattle. But at the end of the day, the end result is still going to be more dead addicts in a city that continues to deteriorate. Oh, but I heard today that Benbridge opened their headquarters in downtown Seattle, their flagship store, and that means Seattle is fine, because one business which was going to open there for the longest time, and it was a little bit delayed because of all the COVID stuff, they still stayed in the building that they just put a whole bunch of money into. So Seattle is fine. Just put that down. Write that down.
Okay, I got that. That's good to know, actually.
Put it in the book of truth, but when we put truth in the air quotes.
Okay, the air quotes truth one, yeah. Book, sure.
So Andrew Lewis ended up becoming the deciding vote on criminalizing drug possession in Seattle. He said, no, I'm going to side with the activists. Now, of course, he positioned it in a way that he hopes is going to earn him some political points. This is a guy who's up for re-election. We talked about this yesterday, the day before. The city was voting on whether or not it would allow the Seattle City Attorney Ann Davison to prosecute drug crimes, because under the state law, drug possession is now a gross misdemeanor. Gross misdemeanors and misdemeanors are handled by the Seattle City Attorney, with the exception of this one, because of how it was previously labeled a felony. And so you have to change municipal code. And as it stands, it goes to the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office, and they are not prosecuting. Now, before the current one, Lisa Mannion, it was Dan Satterberg. He was never, ever, ever, ever going to prosecute, period. End of story. He made that crystal clear. Lisa Mannion, I'm not entirely sure I believe that she would, but she is, at least is in a position where she can give herself some cover and say, we can't. We don't have the staff to do it. We have a backlog of cases, and we can't prioritize a drug possession charge, even if it means getting someone some help, at the expense of charging someone with murder or felony assault. We just can't do that. And I understand that position. To her credit, she came out and said publicly, I like this idea. Give it to Ann Davison. And I think Lisa Mannion deserves some credit for that. Now, Ann Davison has been pushing for this because she thinks that, number one, it's important to actually enforce the law. And number two, you can use the law to push people into treatment. A carrot and stick approach works. It works because the addicts, guess what? They don't like carrots. And you need to have that stick, that threat of imprisonment, to get them to finally say yes to the offers of services, resources, whatever it is they need to get off of that drug. Now, Andrew Lewis, in his vote, basically said, hey, look, I know that this could cost me some votes in my reelection campaign, but I'm going to do it anyway because it's what's right. That was the framing of his vote here. And he said it in that way because he wants you to give him credit for taking tough votes. And he's going to campaign in that way, too. You see, even when I thought it could hurt me politically, I did what I knew in my heart was right. Give me some credit for that. Well, I mean, he does sound like a good guy. I guess I'm not going to give him too hard of a time. That's the intent here. That's the framing. He wants you to give him a pass.
I came out here on the dais today fully prepared to vote for this measure.
I was almost going to cry.
Because I do think it is generally proper that we reconcile our SMC.
municipal code, Seattle municipal code.
To the state law. But this discussion deserves more than this.
What was that about?
Poor guy.
He's
having a tough time.
I don't know what I'm going to do. Talk about theatrics. Don't give him a pass. Don't give him a pass for this. Even if we give him the benefit of the doubt and say he has changed his ways and he is not the activist he once was, and that this truly was a really tough decision for him to make, that he could barely get through a speech without almost breaking down and needing to stop himself like that multiple times into the microphone, the end result is still the same. And we should not pretend otherwise. This is a council that is still run by the far left. And until we make better political choices, this will always be the case. You and I and the surrounding areas who get impacted by this stuff, we will always lose to the radical left. Always in the city of Seattle until you change the political makeup of whether we're talking about the council, whether we're talking about the mayor's office, the county council, the legislative session going in. We know we're going to always lose because of the makeup of the House and the Senate and the governor's office. We will lose 100% of the time to the activist crowd unless we get organized, unless we start winning elections. That means we put better people up for office. We do what we can to support them. Sometimes that simply means donating money to a campaign. Sometimes it means making phone calls on their behalf in a more formal setting as a volunteer for their campaign or knocking on doors. Sometimes it's really simple, just making sure you contact your friends and family to ensure that they voted. And you, with their permission, of course, grab that ballot and you make sure that it is put into the mailbox or a drop box by its due date. Because you know they're not going to be able to do it themselves. Unless we go that extra mile, we're going to continue to lose. Deborah Juarez is on the council. I consider her not a crazy leftist. I don't view her as a radical. But she is still pretty far to the left. And yet she was on this vote a yes for Seattle City Attorney to take this over. And she's becoming, especially since she announced she's not running for re-election, more critical of the way this council operates.
Quite frankly, I am a bit disappointed today in some of my folks, my colleagues, but sometimes Seattle City Council, we are collectively and incredibly bad at focusing on a problem. We ignore hard questions and potential solutions in favor of easy outrage.
I will say this. I don't think it's sometimes. It's often. Absolutely often. If not always, that they go the wrong route because it's the most extreme. And they think by going down that path that they're trailblazers in the progressive world of politics where we're doing things differently. We're blazing the trail for death and destruction, but we're doing it in a way that leads you to believe that we are uber progressive. And that's really all we want. But when you go downtown in particular, as we head into the All-Star Week coming up next month, what was it again, July 6th or 7th it starts?
I think it's the 9th.
Okay, about then. We head into that event knowing you're sending tourists into a trap where they will be surrounded by misery. Addicts who are smoking fentanyl, homeless people who are unwell. And unless we completely sweep them and push them into different neighborhoods, we are sending all of these people to see the embarrassment that Seattle has become. Kylie Ralph is with the Downtown Association. Seattle Downtown Association spoke with our sister station, Cairo News Radio.
The use of dangerous drugs in our public spaces is a significant contributing factor to people feeling unsafe downtown.
100%. I believe she was reading from a poll. When you look at the polling, everyone is pretty much on the same page. It's something like 70% of the folks who are polled in Seattle, voters, saying we've gone too far, that the hands-off approach is not working. And how do we know it's not working? We look at the data. Since we decided to decriminalize in 2018 in King County, and I'm only talking King County, obviously the state decriminalized a couple years ago. But since 2018, every single year, we've seen a new historic number of fatal overdoses. Think about that for a moment. Andrew Lewis says, we need to do more research on this. We just can't rush it. Dude, where have you been? Where have you been? We have the research. We know exactly what works and what doesn't. And even if you're not convinced that going the route of allowing the Seattle City Attorney to take over and push people into diversion programs won't work, let's just say you're not convinced it'll work. Do you know that what we're currently doing is working or not working? You know it's not working. And yet he's unwilling to change direction. God forbid he disappoint the base of the progressive movement that he's going to need to stay in office. And he decided to choose them over you.
It is not our civic duty to provide housing first for those who have chosen this lifestyle.
And our country is proof that this is ineffective, short-term solution that cycles people in and out of jail rather than making any changes in society.
So there you have two completely conflicting viewpoints at yesterday's council hearing during the public hearing. The first person, who was completely outnumbered because she's not a professional activist, saying it's not on us to provide these people households. We can give them help, but we don't have any duty just to give them a home and pretend there's no other issue here. She, of course, gets shouted down or shouted at. Then you have the person who very confidently tells you, we have proof. It doesn't work by cycling people through the criminal justice system. That is a lie. That is a lie. We don't have that proof. You know what they're generally not doing when they're in jail? Getting high. Can they get high? Yeah, they can, because drugs get smuggled into prisons. Sure. But we know that they're, generally speaking, not dying of an overdose when they're in jail. Consider that your safe consumption site, where it's actually monitored. And you know what else they're not doing while they're in jail? They're not breaking the law to then feed their habit, which means we're all being protected from becoming future victims. And of course, because we have a mayor who is a political coward, God bless him, because I don't think he looks at what's going on and is okay. I think he would love to give this power over to both the police and the Seattle City Attorney, but he's like Jenny Durkin, and he doesn't want to create any stirs within the community, the political sphere. He doesn't want to create any political fights. And so he puts out a non-committal statement on this. He completely ignores the fact that the council just did what it did. God forbid he come out and say, hey, I'm going to show some leadership. I want them to give this power to the Seattle City Attorney. I am asking them. He could use his platform to get everybody on the same page here. He's choosing not to do that. Instead says, it's unacceptable for people to consume illegal drugs in public spaces. Not only is it unhealthy, it makes communities feel unsafe and unwelcome. Regardless of this vote, our focus will remain on arresting the dealers and traffickers bringing this poison into our communities. Wow. Thanks. So powerful. You really told those council members who's in charge. You really told the city who's in charge. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Crime.
An avid hiker, which, by the way, is the worst kind of hiker. An avid hiker named Mitch said he drove over to Everett. He parked in the South Everett Park and Ride. And then he did what he was supposed to do, according to state officials who want to get you out of your vehicle. He carpooled with friends to go hiking somewhere nearby. So he goes out there, has the hike of his life as an avid hiker, which means he walked for a few hours and then he walked back. And he's sweaty and he got nothing out of it other than sweat. Oh, I burned 120 calories. Yeah, that's not that much, man. Cardio doesn't do anything. But he gets back to his car and he realized that his gas tank was empty, which was odd because it wasn't empty when he parked it. And what he figured was that someone had siphoned gas from his car because, hey, we live in Washington State and we're seeing these kinds of crimes all over the place. And maybe he said to himself, well, at least it wasn't stolen, right? At least the car was fine. And so he gets, thankfully, his car over to a nearby gas station. And he's pumping gas into his car, probably looking at how expensive it is to get gas. Thank you, Democrats. Saying, oh, I got to do this. But he noticed something happening underneath his vehicle. All the gas was coming out. It was just pouring out. He realized that it was dripping because the crooks apparently drilled a hole in his gas tank as a way to siphon the gas.
This is my first time parking at that park and ride, but we go to plenty of others on the way down to Rainier or Snoqualmie Pass, so it's pretty normal, but I will definitely be rethinking that.
That's Mitch talking to King 5, who says the gas station manager from that station that he used, I think it was a Chevron or something, they asked the guy about what had happened, and apparently he said there was at least one other incident of a driver who experienced exactly the same thing. Now, I imagine there's probably more people who just maybe didn't go to that particular gas station that experienced this. To get this happening once, okay, it happens every in a blue moon. To get it twice this specific, yeah. There's someone doing this, someone getting away with it, because we live in a state that doesn't take this kind of crime seriously. That's the state that we live in. And the funny part is Mitch did what was recommended he do. We're told, hey, carpool down. You know, we got these parking rides. Go into a parking lot that is well lit and secure. Ain't that secure? How is it that this can happen on a park and ride parking lot? We have staff. We can't figure this out. Seriously, we can't figure this out. We can't have security there. You didn't think it was kind of odd that a guy walked in with a big tool that clearly can drill? It's called a drill. You didn't think that that was kind of odd that he was just walking around with the drill and then carrying a bucket of gas?
Wouldn't that be inefficient? I guess if you get the bucket or whatever your receptacle is lined up.
It's not inefficient.
Right.
If anything, it's more efficient.
I guess the other way, to suck on the hose.
Yeah, which is gross because then in the movies, at least, some of it always gets into the person's mouth and then they do this. And they spit it out.
Is that the Andrew Lewis noise?
It was. Maybe that's what he was doing during his speech. He was siphoning gas. It was a lot of hot air coming out of his mouth. What are you to do with this news other than continue to be depressed about the state in which we live? Seriously. Like, what else are you supposed to do? Everyone finds themselves every day, if they're not the victim of a crime, generally a petty crime, but every day that goes by that we're not victimized is just us living the miracle, right? I mean, we're living on borrowed time. At some point, every single person is either personally going to be impacted by one of these crimes or know someone who's going to be impacted by one of these crimes. And unfortunately for too many people, and I don't know this guy other than he's an avid hiker, which by definition makes him insufferable. I don't know anything about his politics, but until people experience this or know someone who's experienced this, they're not going to change their vote. They're not going to change their outlook. And the unfortunate reality is it does take for a lot of people, unfortunately, in this state, certainly on the left, it takes a lot of people to have to experience some of this to realize just how bad it's getting. Because I imagine there's still people who are buying into the nonsense about how Seattle is thriving, which I created that hashtag on Twitter. I was the first person who said that, which, by the way, is rather telling about how people view Seattle before I started to use it a few years ago. I use it very sarcastically. I always say Seattle is thriving after I show video of some homeless person smoking crack on a bus without shoes on, right? Seattle is thriving. There are people who truly believe Seattle is thriving. They truly believe Washington is thriving, and it's just a right-wing myth that things are not going well. They don't leave. They must not leave their apartments. These must be the people who are remote workers who never leave the house.
How can you afford to leave your apartment if you live in Seattle?
Gosh, they probably don't even live in Seattle. Push the button.
What's trending in Jason's world?
So yesterday I announced my book, What's Killing America, Inside the radical left's tragic destruction of our cities. And I take us through policies. I connect dots. I tell you why the radical left believes what they believe. I go through Seattle, Portland, Atlanta, LA, San Francisco, New York, Minneapolis, Chicago. I go all over the country. And we made the announcement yesterday on the show at 3 o'clock here. We did. I did an interview with Harris Faulkner over at Fox News Tonight. She was filling in that slot this week. So I made the announcement there. And then, of course, I went on Twitter. And I will admit that, as you know, I'm mentally speaking, I'm not a very healthy person, right? I'm obsessive. I like to really get involved and pay attention to absolutely everything that could impact me in any way, shape, or form. And so when you have Amazon that counts your rank based upon how many books you sell, you can imagine how many times I'm hitting refresh. Because to my knowledge, I don't know when they actually update, but they update it at random throughout the day. And so I got in my head, let me get to the top 50, because I have no idea how any of this works. And at its peak, which was this morning, I got to top 11 in the political categories, two of the political categories, the two big ones for books of this kind. I don't know if that represents 25 copies sold or 250 copies sold. I have no idea, and we're not going to find that out for a bit. But I got so close to the top 10. And I'm told that even just selling like 3 books can move you up depending on where you are on the ranking. So if you haven't, I've already told you, pre-sales are incredibly important. Please go ahead and purchase What's Killing America. You can go to Amazon if you want. That will help me get into the top 10. You can go to Barnes & Noble, Walmart. If you really want to stick it to Target, I guess you can do a protest buy over at Target online. Go with Amazon and Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Bookshop. Wherever it is you buy your books, please purchase your hard copy of What's Killing America. They paid me a lot of money at the publisher, and I feel a lot of pressure to deliver. And also, I have an ego, and I want to get into the top 10, because they told me getting top 11 before 24 hours had even passed is a really big deal. So thank you for those of you who already purchased. I know lots of people like to wait until like the week of the release or maybe the week after. While I totally understand that, and I would do that as a consumer, now that I'm the author of the book and I know how important the pre-sales are, I am asking you to purchase now. You can go online or just hit me up on my social media channels. I've got links up. 1-800-465-8770 for your texts. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rant Show. Thank you so much for tuning in on this Wednesday afternoon. The View was on this morning in another attempt to make me angry. I'm now of the position that the only reason The View airs is to annoy me. And I know that a lot of you get annoyed, but with all due respect, it's not all about you. It's about me. They're doing it to me. And in this case, I like playing the audio, because who do I hate the most on The View?
Oh, Sunny Hostin.
She is the worst. I mean, she really is the epitome of the term insufferable. This is someone who is as arrogant as she is ignorant.
That's a good way to put it.
She has an unbelievable amount of arrogance in her, and she is incredibly stupid. It's just there's no logic often expressed that at least that makes sense. Maybe to someone it makes sense, but to people who have functioning brain cells, it makes no sense whatsoever. She is uninformed, and she's just rude. She's just a nasty, mean person. There's a difference between just kind of mean but otherwise likable. I imagine if I knew Joy Behar, there'd be something there that I can get along with, because she's snarky like I am. And you can look at Joy Behar and say, you might be mean, but you're not a bad person. You might say bad things, but I don't necessarily think you're a legitimately awful human being. You're just mean-spirited because you don't know what it is you're talking about. Sunny Hostin seems like a bad person. Like, there's nothing redeeming about her other than what Brian says insufferably himself. She's attractive. He said he has a thing for Sonny Austin. He says that almost every morning.
Interesting.
Anytime Sonny Austin comes up, he mentions how beautiful she is. And then he insults her because she's ignorant and insufferable. But he just goes off about how beautiful she is. Is she beautiful? She's not ugly, but you would say beautiful?
Yeah, she's conventionally attractive, yeah.
Ew. Who knew you liked older women?
Well, you were just professing your love for Joy Behar.
I didn't say she was attractive.
You were thinking it.
I was not thinking that. You don't want to know what I was thinking. So Alyssa Farah Griffin, who she's a conventionally attractive, but also a dimwit.
She's got a weird face.
At least she's a conservative, though. She's a pretend conservative. But on The View, right now, without Meghan McCain, that's the best that we can offer. And in this case, the two went after each other over Chris Christie's announcement that he's running. Alyssa Farah Griffin basically took the position that the reason why Chris Christie is running is so he can be the bulldog to go after Donald Trump in order to save the Republican Party. He believes that Donald Trump will destroy it. Sonny Hostin, who knows everything but also nothing, was not excited about allowing Alyssa Griffin to speak.
But what scares me, Alyssa, is that you are incapable of defending a man that you worked for, that you
know of. Why don't you ask me a question, rather?
Now, that part I should have set up. I thought that was in the clip because I could have sworn I asked you to pull that. And so now I'm calling you out on the radio, Producer Max.
No, call it the listeners.
No, I'm calling you out. Alyssa worked for the Trump administration for Mike Pence. Mike Pence, of course, announced today, actually, that he is. Don't give me that look. I was right, was I not?
I don't know.
No, you just looked it up, but I saw your look. I saw the look you gave.
Yeah, your note was a time marker.
Yeah, did you pull the right time marker? No, you did not.
I pulled from after it because they were bumbling and it didn't make sense.
Okay, so my point was I was right.
I made the audio.
Who's always right?
You are.
Thank you. Who's definitely right here?
Okay.
I'm right. I know what I did. This is what it's like off air, but only worse. So Alyssa Farah Griffin used to work for Mike Pence. Mike Pence announced that he's running for president. And she was asked early on, like, why is he running? What's the reason behind it? And, you know, does he even have a shot? Should he be running? Questions like that. And she effectively said, I'm going to wait to see what he says during his big speech to get a better sense of how he's going to position his campaign. She wasn't saying he's a bad person who doesn't deserve to be president. What she was saying was, I don't know what his role is going to be in a crowded field. And certainly going up against the guy you were the vice president to is kind of a big deal. It doesn't happen. I think it happened maybe one other time. And it's a provocative position to take. So how is he going to frame his campaign? That's what she said she was waiting to hear before she comments on whether or not he should even be in the running. Alyssa Griffin did not expect Sonny Hostin to be so mean.
But what scares me, Alyssa, is that you are incapable of defending a man that you worked for, that you know of.
I did ask you a question.
And you said that you needed to hear more from him. And I don't need to hear more from Pence for several reasons.
Because she knows what she's talking about. You just accuse me of something, so why don't you let me actually answer? You're not going to vote for Republican ever.
I'm going to finish what I'm going to say.
The thing about
Pence here is that when I lived in Indiana and I went to Notre Dame, he had a terrible approval rating because of the way he treated the AIDS crisis. Awful. A lot of people died because of how he handled the COVID crisis.
He also
was a parrot for Trump.
Don't make this personal. Let's hear.
Sonny
likes to make it personal with me, so we'll just. Are you going to give me a chance to answer?
Speaking the truth, spearheading Trump's agenda of downplaying the virus.
This is not what the show is about. This is Barbara Walters.
No, that's what the show is about.
Pence did not quarantine himself. You know what? I kind of feel like I need to go to break right now.
Because you're weak.
Maybe.
Because you're a horrible host.
Because I can't hear anybody saying anything.
And then they go to break. That's basically what Whoopi does. Every show, she'll either have, and usually both actually, just some explosion of stupid. She'll just say something outrageous, and then we're supposed to pretend it's smart. or she'll rush to break because she can't control as moderator. That whole position is supposed to be a moderator. She never moderates anything. She just lets each person talk and then they fight. But this one I liked because finally someone said something to Sunny Hostin on air. She's just a rude person. She's just a mean-spirited, nasty person. And finally someone just said it out loud instead of allowing, just having people, you know, externally do it. Someone on the show has to say that. She's mean.
So are you saying Alyssa Fair Griffin's the voice of reason?
She's not the voice of reason, but she was reasonable in this instance. Does that make sense?
So you said something nice about Joy Behar and Alyssa?
Yes, if you consider me saying Joy Behar...
There's two things in one segment.
If you consider me saying Joy Behar is dumb, but probably not a mean-spirited person in real life as a positive, okay, then yes, I suppose.
Well, from you, of course that's a positive.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Why do people watch this show outside of the drama? That's my question. I'm curious if anyone watches the show for content outside of mocking the drama or pointing out the drama. We all love the drama, right? The people just like drama. We're drama queens, all of us. But I don't know anyone who watches this and says, I learned something today. I got something out of that interview and that conversation. I am a now more learned person as a result of having listened to Sunny Hostin read something that some intern pulled for her, copy and pasted on her note cards, and she's reading for the first time. Other, like, right? There's nothing that we got out of that. And I don't know why people who respect themselves put up with this. Because if I was on that show, Sunny, you're not speaking. I'm going to now speak. I don't care that you have your little prepared speech and you're not going to make eye contact. You're doing that thing where you're looking down and not making eye contact because you think somehow that you can demean me in that way. No. And if she continues to talk, I do what I would normally do in a situation like that. And you've seen me do this. I would punch them right in the throat. And then they're not capable of completing their thought. You've seen me do it.
I have.
It got me in trouble and arrested a few times. But sometimes you just need to punch someone in the throat. And that's what I would do with Sunny Hostin. And then people would say, you can't hit a woman. And I'll say, number one, define woman. And number two, why can't I? Equity. She can punch me.
That would be good. I would pay a lot of money to see that.
I'm kidding. I would politely tell her to shut up and then probably throw a chair and then just walk off stage and then it get picked up by all the media blogs and the New York Times and Fox and MSNBC and CNN. And I would use that to write my second book, which would have to do with being a conservative in a tough environment surrounded by nonstop liberals, which really... I could write right now because I live in Seattle. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. You are listening to The Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rant Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Lot of, let's say, tension developing between parents and their school districts all around the country. And I think it's taking Democrats by surprise. And ultimately, I think they're going to regret the decisions that they've made to take positions on gender identity that are well outside of the mainstream. And they do it, of course, because they want to pretend that they are somehow evolved. Again, this is all about proving how trailblazing they all are and their acceptance. They're so tolerant, they tolerate the intolerant. Like, they want to do that. And yet they find themselves getting a lot of pushback from parents who, for the most part, have been relatively white when you look at the larger demographical representation of these groups. And a lot of that has to do with where some of the tensions are occurring. They just are in areas that have a larger white population. But all of a sudden, they find themselves in a weirder position in Los Angeles, in particular Glendale, where the Glendale Unified School District has been discussing new district LGBT-themed curriculum, or at least bringing that a part of the curriculum, and it's upset the community to the point where there was a massive brawl. Antifa made an appearance and everything yesterday. But there is a community within Glendale that is the predominant community, Armenians. Overwhelmingly Armenian community. That is the large demographic in Glendale. and they're the ones who are pushing back. Then you have on the East Coast, out in Maryland, you've got another community, the Muslim community, speaking up and saying, no, 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 no. You are not doing this with us, with our kids. No, 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 no. And so far, the left has said, we're just going to take the side of transgender folks on this issue. Even though I really haven't heard many transgender people outside of the activist community demanding any of this. Have you noticed that? You don't really get just your average, everyday gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, pretending not to have a gender person say anything. Maybe the non-binary people, because those are activists by nature. That's why they're identifying as non-binary. They want to make a political point. But your everyday person who's not a professional activist, I mean, maybe they care to a degree, but also, do I really want to fight for this? No.
I feel like they probably have an opinion on the matter, but they're not going to scream it at you.
Yeah, or they have an opinion that they're scared to share, that they fall in line with our thinking of thinking this is absurd, that it's just you're going too far. There's a push on the left to pretend that this is about tolerance. It is not. This has nothing to do with tolerance. This has nothing to do with bullying. This has everything to do with basics of biology and parental rights and just being factual. And yet you have a teacher in Glendale speaking with News Nation pretending that there's nothing controversial here at all. What are you talking about, parents?
No one's handing us a curriculum and saying you have to teach kids to be gay. Like, I don't even understand. I don't think they know what they're talking about.
They're dumb.
And
they're dumb.
We don't have any prescribed LGBTQ plus curriculum. We just don't leave gay people out of the equation.
Do you think this is only about, quote unquote, we don't leave gay people out of the equation? Do you think that's all that this is about? In all the curriculum that we've seen, all of it, is that all that's in the curriculum? We just include gay people? And notice she started by saying LGBTQ plus, and then she ended it by it's gay. It's not the, no one's talking about that. And there are a few voices who are actively saying you are trying intentionally to teach kids to be gay. I hear the grooming element of this. I don't actually like that language. I generally don't think that that's what's going on. Again, I think that these are educators who are part of the radical left who believe the best way to change culture is to indoctrinate children. And I don't think they view this as indoctrination. I think they view this as just being open and honest and upfront about, quote unquote, their truth. But parents are saying no. And you know what? We get to determine what is not appropriate for our kids.
We're talking about children. We're not ready for such choices. It confuses them. And ultimately, these are things that parents should decide.
And while there certainly have been adults who have taken the position that this should never be introduced at schools, for the most part, the conversation has been around young kids. We're talking about young kids. We're not talking about high schoolers. Those voices exist, there's no doubt. I don't agree, generally speaking, with those voices. Again, it kind of depends on the curriculum. But I don't think you should be introducing transgender issues, issues of gender identity in general, or non-binary. I don't think you should be teaching kids that there's pronouns Z and Zer and Zoo and other noises. Not children, not young kids. You want to have those conversations with a 17-year-old? Okay. I prefer you not take an advocacy position and pretend that it's a fact that there are 12,000 different genders you can have all at once or none at all. But when we're talking about some 11-year-old, it's clearly inappropriate. Clearly inappropriate. Then out in the Los Angeles Unified School District, another community you're seeing in large part taking a lead, Hispanic community, or excuse me, the Latinx community, as the left would say. They're not happy with this either.
Our issue isn't with the LGBT community. Our issue is with LAUSD. That is all. Our message is to keep it out of elementary schools.
Yes.
LAUSD needs to do a better job at protecting our kids. LAUSD needs to do a better job at listening to the parents and the constituents and the taxpayers.
There's also state senators.
Does any of that seem unreasonable, other than the mistake at the end that I'm going to give a hard time to Max for? Does any of that seem unreasonable?
No.
Right? just objectively speaking, even if you disagree with her position on certain issues around gender identity, what she said was not unreasonable. And what we're hearing from parents, frankly, is not unreasonable. We want to have a say in what gets in front of our kids. We want to make sure that we're keeping what we believe to be age-inappropriate material away from our kids. Have us be a part of this conversation. And yes, we do get to have a say. These are our kids. They're not your kids. I know you want to treat them like they're your kids, but they're not yours. They're ours. And we get to decide, not you. And when you're getting into an issue that is inherently political, even more so, we want to make sure that you keep your influence away from them. We get to raise them. We get to instill in them certain values and principles. And you are trying to usurp that because you think it's part of the greater societal good. But you don't get to decide what's for the greater societal good when it comes to my kid. You don't get to do that. You want to do that with your own kids? Have your own kids. These are not your kids. What they're asking for is reasonable. And at some point, while still the Democrats think they're going to win this because they're focusing on pandering to the gender identity extremists, wait till more and more racial minorities, religious minorities, maybe even gender minorities step up and start saying you're on the wrong side. What are you going to do then? You're going to have to pick a side. It's a Jason Rancho.